Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram's oil report for Saturday, October 19th. Atlas Energy's Dune Express nears operation. $400 million conveyor system expected to be completed in December. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Construction of the 42-mile electrified conveyor system carrying sand from Atlas Energy Solutions mine at Kermit into Lee County, New Mexico, is on the verge of becoming operational. The company announced earlier it has begun commissioning of the $400 million Dune Express, with completion expected sometime in December. Quote, "We're wrapping up the construction phase, and we're now installing the electrical equipment," Kyle Turlington, Vice President, Investor Relations with Atlas, told the Reporter Telegram. As the electrical equipment is installed, he said the system will be turned on to ensure the motors are running and the parts are moving, and sections of the system will be tested at a time. Quote, "We'll then do a dry commissioning, running the conveyor belt sometime in October or November, and in December we should start running product," he said. In announcing the commissioning of the Dune Express and providing a third-quarter operational update, John Turner, President and Chief Executive Officer, commented, quote, "We are just months away from beginning to realize our goal of taking thousands of trucks off public roads, making the Permian Basin a safer, more reliable, and environmentally cleaner place to live and work," end quote. Because of issues with the Kermit facility that prompted a rebuild that was completed in July, Atlas expects higher plant operating expenses to cause third quarter 2024 operating results to fall below prior guidance. The company now expects third quarter 2024 revenue will be between $300 and $310 million. Proppant sales volumes are expected to be approximately 6 million tons. The company also expects to book an asset write-down of approximately $9 million related to damage to a new dredge at the Kermit mine that resulted in a total loss. The second dredge is operating and feeding the plant at reduced levels. Those issues having been addressed, Turlington told the Reporter Telegram, and Atlas expects to exit the year with normal expenses. Occidental invests $1 billion in carbon capture plant. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Most energy companies, whether voluntarily or compelled by regulations, are working to reduce emissions from their operations. Occidental Petroleum has invested about $1 billion in its Stratos Direct Air Capture Plant, currently under construction in Ector County. The plant, designed to capture 500,000 tons of carbon dioxide per year, is on target to be commercially operational by mid-2025. Quote, "The challenge with new technology and getting the pilot project off the ground is beginning construction," Manasi Scott, Net Zero Development Lead with Occidental, told members of the Permian Basin Chapter, Society of Petroleum Engineers, and UTPB engineering students at a membership luncheon this week. That removed carbon can either be stored or used in enhanced oil recovery projects, she said. That would make low-carbon oil available for market, she added. According to Scott, there are 60 million tons per annum of industrial carbon dioxide emissions in the Permian area, located near CO2 infrastructure and CO2 demand. She further estimated 60% of U.S. emissions are concentrated in 13 geographic areas and hubs with carbon capture projects. Occidental is committed to converting from natural CO2 to anthropogenic CO2, CO2 captured from current and future industrial sources. That, quote, would unlock 2 billion barrels of recoverable oil remaining, increasing U.S. energy security, she said. CO2-enhanced oil recovery has been deployed since the 1970s, and Scott said multiple companies have Environmental Protection Agency-approved monitoring, reporting, and verification plans for CO2-EOR. This shows CO2 can be safely and securely stored, she said. Permian Basin refineries to use net-zero emissions technology. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Farm-to-table has been a growing trend in the restaurant industry as chefs and diners seek fresh, locally sourced foods. Wellbore to gas tank could soon become a trend in the Permian Basin as a new collaboration aims to construct one or more hydrocarbon processing plants in the Permian Basin. Clean Refineries Incorporated of Edmond, Oklahoma, and Permian Energy Partners of Midland plan to bring Clean Refineries proprietary Net Zero Emissions Technology, or ZNET, to two proposed sites, one in Odessa's Industrial Park area and the other between Stanton and Big Spring. Plans are for the two facilities to process 20,000 barrels of crude per day, scalable to 100,000 barrels per day. Quote, one of the biggest issues with refining today is refineries are the third largest contributors of greenhouse gas, said David Fowler, president of Permian Energy Partners. Continuing the quote, there are 129 refineries in the U.S., 30 in Texas, mostly on the Gulf Coast, and 3 in the Permian Basin, end quote. Those 3, in Big Spring and in Artesia and Lovington, New Mexico, process less than 200,000 barrels per day combined. Quote, the Permian Basin produces over 6 million barrels, he said. Fowler also pointed out the cost of transporting crude from the Permian Basin to refineries and then bringing back the refined product. Quote, we feel strongly the product should be refined here, he said. Derek Williamson, chief executive officer of Clean Refineries, said the closed-looped process uses a flash-to-vacuum separation technology. The system mists the oil into droplets that are then flashed to vapors, and those vapors are one of the separation points. Quote, diesel, naphtha, gasoline, jet fuel will be more defined, he said. The two said each reactor can process 3,400 barrels per day of feedstock, ranging from 8 to 50 gravity, and there will be multiple reactors at each site. They also stressed the cleanliness of the technology, noting that a traditional refinery processing 150,000 barrels per day emits 2,041 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent per year, compared to the ZNET facility that emits 3.6 metric tons from a 150,000 barrels per day facility. For further comparison, a typical four-person home emits 6.3 metric tons of CO2 per year. In addition to supplying diesel, gasoline, and other products, the partnership intends to produce sustainable aviation fuel. The facilities can be built on a much smaller footprint and in a smaller time frame at a lower cost, estimated at about $280 million. But the real benefit is the jobs, Fowler and Williamson said. It's estimated each facility will create 80 primary and 300 to 450 ancillary jobs with payroll over $6 million a year. Quote, I love this idea. It's green. There's no competition. We're not stepping on anyone's toes. Because the industry has a black eye from refining, this gives a green solution we've not had before. And this isn't cyclical with oil prices, end quote. Williamson agreed, quote, our market won't be determined by oil prices. Our margins will remain the same, end quote. Williamson reported the company is in talks with the state of Louisiana on a 20,000-barrel facility to produce marine-grade bunker fuel. The company is also in talks with the city of Kennedy, Texas, for a 30,000-barrel facility that would help provide fuel for municipal fleets. There are also talks about a 10,000-barrel-per-day facility in southwest Wyoming. Kinder Morgan expands Gulf Coast Express pipeline for Permian gas. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Moving natural gas out of the Permian Basin will face one less roadblock after Kinder Morgan decided to expand its Gulf Coast Express pipeline. The company announced it has reached a final investment decision to proceed with the $455 million expansion project, of which $161 million will be Kinder Morgan's share, after securing binding, firm, long-term transportation agreements. The expansion will increase natural gas deliveries by 570 million cubic feet per day from the Permian Basin to South Texas markets. It is expected to be in service by mid-2026. Kinder Morgan is operator of the pipeline, which it jointly owns through a subsidiary along with an affiliate of ArcLight Capital Partners and a subsidiary of Phillips 66. In addition to the Gulf Coast Express, Kinder Morgan is boosting its natural gas operations in the southern U.S., announcing several other projects. Preliminary survey work is being done on the South System Expansion 4, designed to increase Southline capacity by 1.2 billion cubic feet. The $3 billion project will meet growing power generation and local distribution company demand in Southeast markets. Construction activities also ongoing in the $154 million South Texas to Houston market expansion project on the Kinder Morgan Tejas pipeline. The first phase will add compression on the main line, and the second phase will involve 14 miles of looping. Together, they will provide approximately 500 million cubic feet per day to key markets. Construction is also ongoing on the second phase of the $670 million Evangeline Pass project, which will modify and enhance systems in Mississippi and Louisiana, delivering 2 billion cubic feet per day to Venture Global's Plaquemines LNG facility. Chief Executive Officer Kim Dang said during the company's recent third-quarter earnings call that, quote, discussions around opportunities related to significant new natural gas demand for electric generation associated with coal conversions at power plants, artificial intelligence operations, cryptocurrency mining, data centers, and industrial reshoring also continued during the quarter, and we now see an opportunity set well in excess of 5 BCF per day in that area, end quote.
OFR's Rios resumes duties as captain. The Odessa fire rescue captain, who was demoted to lieutenant 3 months ago after allowing a nude photo shoot at station number 2, has resumed his duties as captain. OFR Chief Jason Cotton objected to the use of the word promoted to describe Orlando Rios's ascension up the ladder. Well, it's not necessarily a promotion, it's a reinstatement, and the decision was made because he is a 19-year employee with a clean record, and as the director of Odessa Fire Rescue and the chief, I feel like I know what's best and what's going to be the best for our department, and I think that was what was best, Cotton said. Cotton said it was always understood that Rios was demoted for a specific time frame, and as long as no other infractions took place within that time frame, he could resume his role as captain. However, Rios's order of discipline, signed July 16th, makes no mention of the demotion being temporary. It states the demotion was to become effective after the 10 days of unpaid leave he was also given. It also stated he would not be allowed to work overtime from July 16th through September 28th. According to text received by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act, the woman involved in the photo shoot reached out to Rios November 2nd, 2023, asking about the possibility of using a fire truck in a photo session, and he immediately responded he didn't see an issue with it. They then discussed the possibility of her wearing a firefighter's jacket during the shoot and the need to remove any names from the jacket. Rios also informed her the Odessa fire logo or anything Odessa related could not be in the picture, and she agreed, the texts show. It would have to be no more than 20 to 30 minutes depending on the day. Weekends are best for our shift and free time, he said. He wrote, the texts turned flirty on the day of the photo shoot, November 25th, with Rios thanking her for making his day and joking about his mustache. When she said she's a sucker for beards and stashes, he responded by saying, well, I'm single, so when you want to just have a little fun, hit me up. In two of the redacted photos obtained by the Odessa American, the woman is topless, wearing firefighter turnout pants and standing in front of and beside a fire engine. In a third photo, she is laying nude on the bumper of a fire engine with the number 2 on it and a Texas license plate. Records show that when Cotton entered an order of discipline, he stated Rios violated OFR policies pertaining to conduct and behavior. According to OFR policies, members must strive to attain the highest professional standard of conduct and behave at all times in a manner that reflects favorably on the department. They should also be courteous and respectful to other members of the department, refrain from engaging in sexual activity while on duty, and refrain from abusing their position for personal gain. In addition, members aren't to use or authorize the use of city equipment, property, supplies, or employee services for other than official city business, nor should they engage in nonverbal sexual harassment by distributing, displaying, or discussing any written or graphic material that are sexually suggestive. Our professionalism and the reputation of the City of Odessa and Odessa Fire Rescue are paramount to the success of our employees, our mission, and our oath-taken responsibility. Cotton wrote in the order of discipline, as an officer of OFR, the expectations are even higher. You are expected to lead, mentor, and provide for the employees in your charge. Your decisions become lessons that others learn just by watching, and you make them. The decisions that led to the above policy violations are an opportunity for you to learn from as well. Cotton noted back in July that Rios had never been disciplined in the 19 years he's worked for the department, and he's always met or exceeded expectations when evaluated. Cotton said OFR believes in second chances, and your contrite heart was obvious during this discussion. That included your love of your career, your co-workers and the department, and the city of Odessa. city may spend more than $8 million on inland port land. The Odessa City Council has a particularly busy agenda Tuesday. They'll discuss buying land for an inland port, a bathroom ordinance, the controversial TGAA contract, salaries, the sports complex, and the future of Equipment Services Director Chris Adams. During the council's regular 6 p.m. meeting, the City Council will be asked to bless an agreement the Odessa Development Corporation was to make October 16th to purchase property at 3215 West Murphy Street for an inland port that will be operated by Permian Basin Inland Port. The October 16th meeting was later rescheduled to October 21st. The agreement calls for the city to purchase the land for nearly $8.3 million and to put almost $1 million into escrow as a refundable earnest money deposit. The deal has been a couple of years in the making. In July 2022, Mayor Javier Hoven spent a couple of days south of New Orleans visiting with people at the Plaque Mines, Port Harbor, and Terminal District, and businessmen who hoped to one day create a direct transportation line between the port and Odessa. Hoven said at the time two of the principals had ties to Odessa, and they were in talks about building a rail facility and connecting up with existing Union Pacific railways. The principals like that Odessa is already familiar with oil, gas, and chemicals, Hoven said. It would be like, oh my God, we can bring in all these costs, get chemicals, they're already here, there's not a lot of re-education, there's not a lot of danger to the community, there's no more than we already are dealing with on a daily basis, Hoven said at the time. On March 28, 2023, council members heard a presentation from Taylor Rich of SiteLogX, a company that works with industrial rail shippers and commercial developers to design, build, and operate rail-serviced industrial parks and ports. Rich and one of his clients, Roger King from Pipeline Innovation, spoke about the lack of rail service in the Permian Basin and the need for an inland port. King said smaller companies have a demand for rail service and an inland port would be an opportunity to level the playing field for smaller companies. On June 13th, the ODC signed a memorandum of understanding with Permian Basin Inland Port to assist and provide support for the development of the port. Texas Secretary of State records show a Roger King is a registered agent for Permian Basin Inland Port, and campaign finance records show a Roger King donated $1,500 to Hoven's re-election campaign. Hoven is facing Odessa attorney Cal Hendrick. Early voting started Monday. TGAA. The council is also scheduled to discuss city manager John Beckmeyer's signing of an interlocal governmental agency with the Texas Government Accountability Association, a nonprofit group that has promised to help the city in its efforts to be transparent and ethical by creating policies and procedures. The open-ended agreement is $24,000 a year for years 2 through 5 and can increase at that time. In addition, it can only be ended if it's placed on a ballot and residents vote to do so. City Councilman Steve Thompson asked for the agreement to be placed on the agenda. Because he has questions as to when the contract was negotiated and the legality of the agreement because TGAA isn't a governmental agency. Thompson and Councilman Gilbert Vasquez have also expressed concerns that Beckmeyer's longtime friend Matt Armstrong brought the group to the council, and Armstrong is running Hoven and council member Denise Swanner and Mark Mata's re-election campaigns. Beckmeyer, Swanner, Hoven, and Mata did not sign conflict of interest forms. TGAA insists Armstrong doesn't work for them, and the city indicated there are no records showing Armstrong was a contract or employee agreement with Beckmeyer or the city. The council is also scheduled to discuss amending the city's 1989 ordinance regarding the entering of city-owned restrooms by members of the opposite sex. According to the city agenda, it is deemed to be in the best interest of city residents to amend the code to limit the use of these additional facilities in city-owned buildings based on an individual's birth sex in order to maintain privacy and safety in public restrooms, changing rooms, and locker rooms. Adams. According to the council's agenda, city council members are also scheduled to go into executive session to discuss the appointment, employment, evaluation, reassignment, duties, discipline, or dismissal of Adams, who was hired by the city in June 2023. Since he was hired, Adams convinced the city council to create its own tire shop and to purchase fuel equipment so city employees can fuel city-owned vehicles. Both measures, he said, would save the city money. Adams has also been named in a lawsuit filed in Ector County District Court against the city of Southern Tire Mart, which alleges Adams has hostile feelings toward the company, and as a result, the city has intentionally violated Texas law by purchasing tires from a competitor for the last year. The lawsuit alleges Adams falsely claimed STD double billed the city by more than $180,000 and did not retract that statement despite being shown documents disproving it. Ector County Commissioner Don Stringer also emailed Beckmeyer back in August that Adams was using a city-owned vehicle to drive back and forth to his home in Lubbock, thus violating a city policy. Emails obtained by the Odessa American under the Texas Public Information Act show Beckmeyer told Adams to stop using the vehicle to commute. Water. Also, during Tuesday's regular session, Interim Utilities Director Alex Rolette is scheduled to ask the council if he can submit an application for a state-funded loan program through the Texas Water Development Board. The funds would be for the construction and design of a proposed water tower on the northeast side of the city. He also plans to ask if he can move $350,000 from the Pioneer Fund, which is comprised of mineral right sales money, to the Darrington Wastewater Treatment Plant to help improve day-to-day functions so that the plant will be able to continuously operate. Finance Director Kaylee Banda is also on Tuesday's agenda. She'll be asking for $3 million for various positions not included in next year's budget. The positions are in various departments throughout the city, including equipment services, the city manager's office, IT, solid waste, Odessa Fire Rescue, Odessa Police Department, community development, solid waste, wastewater and billing, and collections. During the city's 3 p.m. work session meeting, the city council will discuss going out on bids on waste and water projects because Eduardo Madrid and Associates has opted not to extend its contract with the city for the second time. According to materials provided to the council, this company was awarded a three-year, $3.8 million contract in November 2020 with the option to extend it twice. Since January 2021, the company has worked on water and wastewater line replacements, fire hydrant replacements, and emergency water line breaks under the supervision of the city's utility department. According to Rowlett, their contract is ending December 31st, and they do not want to extend it. As a result, they need to find another company to take on their jobs. This RFP is important and crucial to the day-to-day function of our water and wastewater infrastructure, as we currently do not have enough personnel to perform these services, Rowlett wrote. The Council will also hear some from Gallagher Human Resources, which was hired to determine how the city compares to other cities, make recommendations on salaries, and how to implement any changes. According to materials provided to the Council, Gallagher has determined the city's base salaries are below the mark on the 50th percentile and possibly misaligned with the market at the 75th percentile. The materials show Gallagher has offered two options to the city, one that would cost $3.4 million and another that would cost roughly $6.8 million. The latter would mean that city would be among the top quarter of comparable employers. Beckmeyer is also expected to update the council on the pre-development agreement with Sports Med Properties for the new sports complex. Fantastic Halloween in the Park. If you haven't been to Halloween in the Park, you're in for a real treat. The Ector County Library will host its annual fall event at Noel Heritage Park from 4 to 6 p.m. October 26th. All ages and the entire community are welcome. Books, toys, candies, and more. Join them and their generous sponsors, Alliance Therapy Dogs, Bubba's, ECISD, Harmony Home, Idea Schools, Southwest Heritage Credit Union, Texas Roadhouse, and Wentz Orthodontics for all the fun. Grand Companions sets adoption events. Grand Companions has scheduled pet adoption events Saturday in Odessa and Midland. On Saturday, October 26th, Grand Companions is going to be out in the community with some adoptable animals from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Petco, 6209 Texas 191 in Odessa. You may just find your next Grand Companion. From 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday, October 26, come visit Grand Companions at MTCU's Trunk or Treat event at 4717 North Midkiff Road in Midland. There will be adoptable pets, food trucks, games, candy, door prizes, and so much more. Join for a fun and family-friendly evening. For 35 years, Grand Companions has been a beacon of hope for homeless pets across West Texas. Their mission is to save, shelter, and honor pets as they find their way to loving homes. With locations in both Fort Davis and Midland, Grand Companions will help has helped countless adopters find the perfect pet and is proud to be a resource in the communities they serve. Idea Public Schools to host groundbreaking for new school. Idea Public Schools, a leading network of tuition-free K-12 public charter schools, is thrilled to break ground and welcome a new campus featuring two schools, Idea Lopez Academy and College Preparatory, to the families of Odessa for the 2025-26 school year. Idea will host a groundbreaking event to celebrate the monumental achievement at 11:30 a.m., October 30th at the Idea Lopez campus, 3401 West 5th Street in Odessa. IDEA's mission is to transform education by preparing graduates to succeed in college and life. Founded in 2000, IDEA serves over 87,000 college-bound students in 145 schools nationwide, including across Texas, Louisiana, Ohio, and Florida. For 17 consecutive years, nearly 100% of IDEA Public Schools graduates have gone on to college, with many being first in their family to attend college, a news release said. IDEA Lopez honors IDEA's late acting CEO and superintendent, Al Lopez. Lopez was a first-generation college student who paved the way for students to unlock their full potential and make a lasting impact in their communities. He was introduced to IDEA in 2012 as planning for the first campus in Austin was underway. Over the 10 years that followed, Lopez served at every moment the organization needed him. In 2015, he joined the National Board, later serving as its chair in 2020 and as acting CEO and superintendent, beginning in 2021 until his sudden passing in 2022. IDEA, Lopez Academy, and College Preparatory will serve as the third campus in the broader IDEA Permian Basin region and will serve grade levels K through 2 and 6 in its first year. The new campus will offer a unique curriculum and college support model, which is comprised of people, programs, and culture. IDEA aims to close the opportunity gap and increase levels of achievement by preparing students from underserved communities for success in college and beyond. Presenters for the groundbreaking include Jeff Cottrell, Superintendent and CEO of IDEA Public Schools, Colin Sewell, Chair of the Board of Directors for IDEA Public Schools, Annette Macias, Executive Director of the IDEA Permian Basin Region, and students from neighboring campuses of IDEA Travis and IDEA Yukon. IDEA Lopez is set to open its doors in August for the 2025-26 school year. Registration is now open, and families interested in applying or in learning more can visit ideapublicschools.org. Midland County resident dies of West Nile virus. City of Midland Health Services has confirmed a Midland County resident has died from the West Nile virus for the first time this year. Mosquitoes can carry West Nile virus after they feed on infected birds. The infected mosquitoes can then spread the disease to humans through a mosquito bite. This disease cannot be spread person to person. 80% of those who are infected show no symptoms at all. For people who do develop symptoms, they can include headache, fever, muscle and joint aches, nausea, and fatigue. About 1 in 150 people may develop central nervous system infections and can experience additional symptoms of neck stiffness, stupor, disorientation, coma, tremors, convulsions, muscle weakness, paralysis, meningitis, encephalitis, and even death. While there are no medications to treat or vaccines to these infections, for most symptomatic individuals, rest, fluids, and over-the-counter pain medications will relieve their symptoms. People over 50 years old and those with other health issues are at higher risk of becoming seriously ill. If people have symptoms and suspect West Nile virus infection, they should contact their health care provider and inform them of previous mosquito exposure. Please take steps to reduce mosquito bites. These include wearing an EPA-registered insect repellent, covering up with long sleeves and pants, keeping mosquitoes out of living areas by using air conditioning or intact window screens, limiting outdoor activities during peak mosquito times, sunrise and sunset, dumping standing water around your home. For more information on West Nile virus, visit the DSHS website at https://dshs.texas.gov/idcu/disease/arboviral/West Nile/. Malloween is back. From 5 to 7 p.m. Saturday, October 26, merchants will be handing out free candy at Music City Mall. Stay out of the elements and enjoy this Halloween weekend with the kiddos. Capture your Halloween memories at the free selfie station. Enjoy mall-wide activities in your best costume. Bring the whole family and head over to Music City Mall for a safe and fun Malloween experience. Don't miss the fun times at MCM Rink and Roll too. Enjoy free candy and fun. Free activity books are first come, first served.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Saturday, October 19th, 2024. Religion. Features from the Bible. Truth in Scripture. Elijah taken up to heaven. 2 Kings 2. The Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal when Elijah told Elisha to stay where they were while he went on to Bethel, because the Lord has told him to go there. Elisha told Elijah that he would not leave him, so they went to Bethel together. Elijah tried to leave Elisha at Bethel while he went to Jericho, as the Lord directed him. Elisha insisted that he go to Jericho too. Elijah started to go from Jericho to the Jordan because the Lord had sent him there, and leave Elisha at Jericho. Elisha insisted on going with Elijah. At the Jordan, 50 men watched from a distance as Elijah took his cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water with it. The water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on dry ground. Elijah asked Elisha to tell him what he could do for him before he was taken from him. Elisha asked that he be permitted to inherit a double portion of Elijah's spirit. Elijah told Elisha that although he had asked a difficult thing, if he saw him when he was taken from him, the double portion of Elijah's spirit would be Elisha's. As they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw it happen and cried out, "My father, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel." Elisha did not see Elijah anymore. He took his own clothes and tore them apart. He picked up the cloak that had fallen from Elijah and went back to the Jordan and struck the water with it, and it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over. Please Give Your Undivided Attention by Van Yandell. Retired industrial arts teacher and ordained gospel evangelist and missionary. James 5, 16b, the effectual fervent prayer of a righteous man availeth much. Many of the conversations at our house begin with, "You haven't heard a word I've said." To write an article on undivided attention will get a rolling of the eyes from wife Margie. My dad told me, when engaged in a conversation, look at the person talking. My mistake was telling Margie that. Whatever my dad said was okay with her. If we stare off into space or look at our phones, our lack of attention is certainly noticed. To interrupt during a conversation is rude and thoughtless. Apparently, some have no idea what their action is conveying. The attitude of, "I don't care what you think," or "just listen to me," is obvious. There are people with whom even an attempt at a conversation is close to impossible. If faced with such a curse, one might consider saying very little, knowing he will not be allowed to finish a sentence. Recently seen was a statement on coping with interrupters. The statement read, "Ignore them and keep on talking. I'm not promoting that action, but it might work with some. Personally, I prefer to walk away or pick up my phone. But does rudeness deserve rudeness?" It is not a conversation if only one person is talking. Conversations and interactions involve at least two people. Respect is a characteristic many do not exemplify. However, this insincere action is one most are not aware of displaying. Perhaps we have all been guilty at some point in time, but being aware of such actions may keep us from doing such so often. James 1:19, "Know this, my beloved brothers, let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger." One might think rudeness in Bible times may not have existed as it does today. Apparently, based on this verse from James, that was not the case. Brian H. McGill, author, said, "One of the most sincere forms of respect is actually listening to what another has to say. It is a conscious effort to listen and not be thinking of what I'm going to say next. Our minds race incessantly, and for our thinking not to be out ahead of the words of others requires focus and intentionality." Sitting with an NYPD police officer the week after the 9/11 terrorist attack, we talked for at least 2 hours. He finally said, "Well, I've got to get back out there." As he was walking away, he turned and said, "You're an excellent conversationalist." I had not said 3 words. He just needed someone to listen. Being a teacher, my mindset is to convey information, to motivate, and even to inspire. It is a continual effort to keep my mouth shut. I must also concentrate to listen without thinking what to say next or simply let my mind wander. Okay, I've confessed. It's your turn. To monopolize a conversation also shows a lack of respect for others. Others may have input into the discussion, and to take over shows a high degree of disrespect. It has also been noticed when we are really listening, we will retain portions of the information. The situation may be a one-on-one conversation or a lecture. To be able to repeat to the speaker a part of what he or she has said shows that person, someone, has absorbed and processed what was said. In Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, his first chapter is entitled, "If you want to gather honey, don't kick over the beehive." His final line in that chapter of such an in-depth analogy is, "Don't criticize, condemn, or complain." Also stated later in his writings, "Even God doesn't judge until judgment day." To give our undivided attention also includes what not to say. Carnegie was the master of conversation and influence. We would do well to heed his suggestions. Does God give believers his undivided attention? We may wonder at times why God does not answer our prayers. The forthwith and simple answer is, he knows our needs better than we do. We must consider what we are asking for. Are our prayers selfish and materialistic? The heathen asks for long life, riches, power, and death to his enemies. Solomon asked God for wisdom, 1 Kings 3:9. "Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge this thy great people, that I may discern between good and bad. for who is able to judge this so great a people? One particular verse in the Lord's Prayer, Matthew 6:11, "Give us this day our daily bread," commands our attention. Jesus did not teach us to ask excessively, but only for basic sustenance, daily bread. Some in Christendom have written their own gospel, many on social media, that tell us if we do or don't do certain things, we are not Christian. Those statements are judgmental and usually not scripturally accurate, causing confusion about scriptural truth. John 3:16 states the entire salvation process in one verse, and we do not have to jump through hoops or walk through coals of fire by some self-appointed prophet to have eternal salvation. Simply follow the instructions of Jesus. We must always teach that eternal salvation is attained by a faith-based belief. We must always teach that eternal salvation is attained by a faith-based belief, Ephesians 2:8, in Christ Jesus crucified, Matthew 27:35, for the remission of sin, 1 John 1:9, and resurrected, Matthew 28:6. God is listening. We are to praise him and give thanks, but be careful what you ask for. Paul's escape showed power through weakness. Apostle fought accusation that he was weak, by Bob Campbell. The Apostle Paul always inculcated the spiritual strength of first century Christians, but he had to rely on their physical strength when they lowered him in a basket from the high wall of Damascus to escape the governor who had ordered his arrest. The Reverend Daniel Perez, Spanish language pastor of the Odessa Bible Church, said communist terrorists kidnapped him and a number of other people from a children's Bible camp in Venezuela, and later threatened to kill him and his wife and baby daughter because he was espousing the gospel. We felt like Paul in the basket because we had to run away and escape with our lives, the Reverend Perez said. If you truly believe in Jesus, you have to be ready to experience those situations of being unsafe and feeling at risk. God bless the United States of America. Minister Greg Fleming of the Downtown Church of Christ in Midland cited 2 Corinthians to say Paul combated Corinthian critics who claimed, based on earthly wisdom, that he was too weak to be a good missionary. Paul does this by emphasizing that his clay jar approach to ministry makes it clear that he relies on God's surpassing power rather than his own ability, Fleming said. A cross-based ministry looks to Jesus, who was crucified in weakness but lives by the power of God. 2 Corinthians 13:4. Sandwiched within Paul's essay on not boasting, 10:7-12:10, is what is sometimes spoken of as his fool's speech, which he concludes by boasting about his weakness, the minister said. His story of being lowered from a window in the high Damascus wall in a basket at night, 11:31-32, fits this theme, Fleming said. This ignoble account of slipping out of town on the sly is the opposite of common ancient hero stories depicting a brave soldier who is first over the wall to conquer a city. In my view, this story illustrates his theme of power in weakness. Paul said, "That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Following the 11th chapter of 2 Corinthians is Paul's account of a vision in 12:2-4. "I know a man in Christ who 14 years ago was caught up to the third heaven. Whether it was in the body or out of the body, I do not know. God knows. And I know that this man, whether in the body or apart from the body, I do not know, but God knows, was caught up to paradise and heard inexpressible things, things no one is permitted to tell." The Care and Keeping of a Pastor by Reverend Dr. Don Weeks, pastor of Connection Christian Church. 10 years have gone by in a hurry. Our family moved to the basin in September of 2014, beginning our adventure here in the oil patch. My husband and I serve as co-pastors of Connection Christian Church, Disciples of Christ. After a decade together, we can testify that these folks have taught us more about how to love than we have taught them. During our tenure here, we've seen a lot of pastors at various churches come and go, and we've seen a few stay. I've been thinking about why we love this congregation so much and why we've stuck here. I hope it's helpful for you as you consider your own church and pastor, or what you might look for in a church and pastor. Here's how our congregation takes good care of us. We share the ministry. At our congregation, it's been abundantly clear from the beginning that it's not all up to the pastor. We've done some big things together, and our leaders have shouldered their part in prayer, in generosity, and in sweat equity. They don't expect us to be superhuman. We have a Savior, and they know it's not the pastor. They make a point to encourage us, whether it's checking in after a hard week or sending a note to say good job after an event. Our folks know that pastors are empowered by their people. They celebrate our birthdays and wedding anniversary, and they say thank you a lot. They also pray for us regularly, and prayer makes pastors better. They give us ample time off. This congregation honors our time away and encourages us to take it. They not only give us abundant vacation, but also offer to help while we're gone. They don't text us at all hours or expect us to check email on our days off. They know we need downtime. They take responsibility for their own spiritual growth. Connection folks are eager to learn and grow. While we resource them and coach them on their journeys, they are reading, learning, serving, and stepping out of their comfort zones as God leads them. I've heard of the complaint, "My church doesn't feed me." Well, unless you're an infant, the spiritual feeding is up to you. We laugh together a lot. Our congregation just celebrated our Odessaversary with a big dinner party and fundraiser. In one grand day of giving, they contributed an amazing amount to finish paying off the note on our new-to-us church building. That was so inspiring. And equally special was that they roasted us as their pastors with hilarious quips poking fun at us. The church that doesn't take itself too seriously is my kind of church. A lot of people think that good pastors create great churches. But what I know to be true is that great churches create good pastors. Thank God for Connection Christian Church here in Odessa, Texas.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.